I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Your Tampa Bay Lightning take a 3-1 lead in their best-of-seven series over New Jersey with a 3-1 win and two goals by Nikita Kucherov. But guess what? Will he be suspended for Game 5? He could be. The Tampa Bay Rays win their series over the Rangers, but not without some more shaky moments from Alex Colome. And the NFL schedule comes out tonight at 8 p.m. Some thoughts about the Bucks and why you should pay closer attention to it than normal. All that and more on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. Before we get started, I want to tell you about a special offer from Audible.com. Sign up now and get a free 30-day trial. That's a $15 value. And as a listener to this show, you get a free audiobook. Just go to audibletrial.com/sportsday to take advantage of the deal. That's spelled audibletrial.com/sportsday for a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook. So, Steve, this was a pretty exciting game. I must admit, these games get better as we get deeper into the series. But look, on Nikita Kucherov was the best player on the ice, I thought, other than, I mean, we can talk about the goaltender, obviously, in Andrei Vasilevskiy in just a minute. But and not just because he scored two goals, including the empty netter, but because he flexed his muscles, and that might end up getting him in trouble. As a team, they out-hit the Devils. And maybe it was Kucherov that sort of set the tone, and you believe a hit that could be looked at pretty closely by the NHL, right?
Yeah, he hit Sami Vatanen late in the first period, kind of shoulder-to-shoulder. Depending on, and we've only really seen one good replay at this point, I don't think he really launched into him. He definitely kind of went from a crouch position to a more standing upright position. But the way his feet then kind of flailed after they collided, you could kind of say he launched. I do believe his shoulder did make some contact to the head. Now, many people believe that the penalty or the threshold is the first place you hit. So if you hit shoulder to shoulder first, then it wipes out
anything after that. Yeah,
but the actual rule says it's the principal spot where you hit them. So even if you hit shoulder to shoulder first, which I believe he did,
but you go the shoulder through the
did
shoulder.
Make some head contact. Will it be enough to be suspended? Drew Doughty was suspended earlier in this playoffs for, well, not the same play, but a similar type thing for one game. I believe the NHL is going to suspend him for a game. I don't personally believe that he should, but I think he will be suspended for a game for that hit.
Wow, that would be devastating for the Lightning.
Vatanen's their best defenseman. He did not come back in the game.
And that's got to be a factor, don't you think? The fact that he couldn't return, that NHL will look at that as well?
A lot of times the injury is now. If he comes back in the next game, if tomorrow or Friday they say, oh, he's fine, it was just held out for the rest of the game, that can affect it. But generally the NHL, depending on the injury to the player, that can affect the punishment some. I know they try not to dole out as many punishments in a playoff game because one playoff game is worth a lot more than a regular season game per se. But, this series kind of got really chippy at the end of Game 3. We didn't think
it wouldn't carry over, right?
I mean, that's what it would. But the Lightning was taking it to New Jersey to start the game.
I think they went out with the express purpose of saying, we're going to go out there and just hit these guys all, right from the start, as soon as they drop the puck.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. And how about, and really that hit sort of set the tone. How about the one Braden Colburn put on Blake Coleman into the New Jersey bench?
You mentioned that Nikita Kucherov was the best player on the ice. Braden Coleman has been wonderful in this series.
He was huge in this game.
And as much maligned as he had been throughout much of the season, this playoff series, and even late in the season, but this playoff series, he has been really good, not just for some of the hits he's had. And, in Game 3, he had, a couple assists or, one that was taken off. That was a beautiful play, the waved off goal. Or tonight, there was one goal that was waved off. It was a beautiful play by Braden Coburn. He's a big defenseman coming up the ice, makes a nice move to avoid Kunitz, goes in the zone, drops the pass, and he goes straight to the net to block, and Corey Conacher scored. Now, the goal was called off. But
he did have the assist on the game winner, did he not?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Yeah. No, he's had a wonderful series. As much as he's taken some criticism this year, he was one of the best players on the ice tonight, too.
He was. In fact, I mean, they got good performances all the way around. Kucherov now has 9 points in this series. However he gets them, that's what he has. I know he has two empty netters, but nonetheless. JT Miller was big in this game. He had a goal and two assists. How about Anthony Cirelli? And you say he goes by Tony now, right?
That's what he prefers to be called.
Okay, well, Tony Cirelli, a good kid from the neighborhood.
Well, he's in Jersey. I mean, they're playing in Jersey.
I know. He's in his backyard. 16 minutes, played 14 on the penalty kill, which was very good tonight.
He's such a smart penalties. Player. He's such a smart player. He makes the right decisions and knows where to be at the right times. He's fun to watch, especially
way
as
above
a,
his
as
years.
Oh, absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And what about the trust that they're gaining in this guy every night?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's playing more and more, and the penalty kill is—they're taking too many penalties. And here we started once again. You look up, they got a 5-on-3 again.
The penalty kill has been fantastic these last two games. Fantastic. Now, the 2 5-on-3s, they've given up goals, but 5-on-3s, you almost always give up a goal.
Always, yeah.
The 5-on-4s, they have been fantastic. Mm-hmm. And that's the key to that's why they've won the last two games. Or they didn't win. I mean, that's why they won tonight and were in the game game three.
Yeah, they were ahead 2-1. I mean, let's not, you know, that's sort of where it was. But the job that they, the other thing that was in addition to being physical tonight, Steve, as we do this podcast shortly after the game, was the job that they did on Taylor Hall. He had one shot on goal. Do you realize that?
Mm-hmm.
And they decided to bring the physicality to him. They pounded him and hit him often and hard. And he's not a guy that takes a lot of hits.
Yep.
He avoids them for the most part.
He took a couple penalties too.
Yes, he did. So, you know, look, both teams are getting their share of penalties. This has been that kind of series. They combined for 11 in this game, which is, you know, usually in the playoffs. I mean, I thought the idea for the officials was to kind of let teams play. That's not the way it's been this game. This series here has been officiated. Well, I know they're both fast.
This whole playoff season, there's been more power plays and more power play goals than normal. Than in years past as far as playoff series.
So why is that? Is that like a note from the NHL? Let's call things tight. I mean, what is that?
That would be my guess, is that the NHL has said, you know, let's get better control of these games and let's not, you know. I thought in the game after the Kucherov hit, and then after, you know, Brian Boyle kind of came after him, but for the most part it kind of calmed down after that. I mean, it was physical, but it wasn't the, you know, I thought the officials were losing control of the game. And when you don't call penalties, that's what happens, is officials lose control of the game and people start taking shots. That's one of the things in the playoffs I've always disliked, is, you know, a penalty is a penalty. Call it. You know, it doesn't matter if it's game one or, you know, game seven of the Stanley Cup final. A penalty is a penalty. Now, you want to let them play, and I understand swallowing
it
a little bit.
If it's ticky-tack, I mean, you don't want to call the ticky-tack.
But you still got to call a penalty. I think this year they're... It's still inconsistent, as it always is, but I think it's been better, and I think the NHL probably is looking at, hey, power play, score more goals, and we want to score more goals.
Well, that's true, and that's how these teams are definitely scoring. Let's talk a little bit about Vasilevskiy, because, you know, as great as he has been all year, he was playing this way at the start of the season, and the way he's tracking the puck right now, Steve, I'm not sure anyone can score on him, you know, 5-on-5. I mean, the amount of breakaways that he stopped for them was incredible. And, you know, he's their best player. And when he plays like that, I'm not sure anyone can beat them. I mean, they outshot the Devils 37-26. But there were great scoring chances that New Jersey had, you know, turnovers and some long passes and whatnot. And then, you know, not to be outdone, I mean, but how about the assist that he sort of had on the game winner to get it up the ice? They've got the extra skater on, and before they can get really it settled, you know, into the Lightning zone, he comes out and plays the puck and gets it up the ice, and it ends up in the empty netter.
He absolutely has been their best player all year. And yes. The second half of the season, he wasn't – the stats definitely weren't as good. I think there's a lot of reasons for it. I think the defense in front of him wasn't as good. I think, you know, he said he was mentally tired. Well, he said mentally and physically tired, but I think some of that fatigue is simply the fact of we already know we're going to the playoffs. We know we're going to be one of the best teams. It's that how do you get up for a game every night when you're already your mind's already in April going in the playoffs, and now you're playing Arizona on a Tuesday night.
Yeah, the carrot's going. I understand that.
And I think the whole team kind of went through that. And
sure,
it's good to see that now that the playoffs are here, they've stepped it up because the Lightning have dominated New Jersey in this series all four games.
They have.
Five on five, New Jersey can't hold Tampa Bay's water in this series. The power play and some of the special teams has kept New Jersey in it. That's how they stole the game. Corey Schneider's played better than Keith Kincaid has, but they still can't. You know, 5-on-5, the Lightning are dominating in shots, dominating in time of possession. They're just a deeper, better team than New Jersey.
And until Wednesday night, Taylor Hall had kind of taken, you know, as he has most of the second half of the year, has been their offense. And I think the Lightning just decided that guy's not beating us. You know what? If he's on the ice, we're gonna let him know we know where he is on the ice, and we're gonna knock the hell out of him. And that's what they did.
In game five's now back in Tampa, which means Tampa Bay gets the last change, which means you get to dictate which line's on the ice when Taylor Hall's on the ice, and the Braden Point line has shut him down.
They have. I thought that that line with tonight the line that came alive, of course, was Stamkos and Kucherov. How about JT Miller on that line? Was very, very good, of course.
You know, at the trade deadline, the trade was for Ryan McDonagh, and that's what everyone was expecting, that the Lightning were either going to get Erik Karlsson or Ryan McDonagh to bolster the blue line because they needed help on the blue line. And
that was their primary need. Defense was what they really needed.
And Ryan McDonagh has been great on the blue line for them, especially once they paired him with Strahlman. They've really formed a shutdown pair for them, and he's been very good. But also including in that trade, swapping Namestnikov for JT Miller. Namestnikov's a very good player, don't get me wrong. But JT Miller brings a different skill set, bigger, more physical, does a lot more of the dirty work. And Namestnikov was
around the net.
You know, Namestnikov did some of that too, but Miller's pure size and all that is something the Lightning don't have. They have lots of guys like Tony Cirelli and Tyler Johnson and Vladislav Namestnikov who are a little smaller forwards or centers that do very well. And like I said, Namestnikov's a very good player. He'll be fine in New York. But bringing someone like JT Miller in just shows you how good Steve Yzerman is as a GM. Not only did he get the defenseman he needs, but he upgraded on the front line and got more of a power forward, which is exactly what you need in the playoffs.
Especially now that Ryan Callahan is out. You know, I mean, this is sort of that presence that you need in front of the net. I thought that they got a lot more minutes and a lot more play out of their fourth line tonight, Steve, that kept those other guys fresh too.
I think some of that was that physical play and some of the rough stuff coming in. They wanted that fourth line out there more. To try to tamper some of that down too. But they've done very well. And hopefully Ryan Callahan's back Saturday. He did skate in morning skate again today, but they didn't play him. Tyler Johnson did play after missing yesterday for body maintenance, but he was in the lineup. So,
yeah, that was important. So the series now shifts back to Tampa, the Lightning up 3-1. Basically, it's, you know, got to win, one out of the next three games,
What the Lightning will tell you is they don't want to get on a plane again in this series.
Exactly.
Win it in game five and stay home. That's what you want to have happen. You don't want to have to get on a plane and go back to New Jersey.
Absolutely. And do we have a time for that game yet?
3:20 will be face-off on NBC. So you watch it on Channel 8 locally here in Tampa Bay.
The big announcers, as they say, the big show.
Yes, I'm not sure which announcers we'll get for the game, but after you watch tonight's on the Golf Channel.
Well, see, I watched it on Sunshine.
Nationally,
the national telecast.
I wondered if you shot the puck and missed the net, do you have to yell 4?
It would have been kind of fun if they had the golf announcers, you know, from NBC. Hello, friends. And Steven Stamkos with the one-timer. Yeah. Anyway, I tell you what. That's right. Yeah. Get in the hole. Get in the net. Every time a guy shoots, get in the net. That would be actually kind of funny if you think about it. Or what's the new one now is Dilly Dilly.
Yes.
You know, they outruled Dilly Dilly at the Masters.
Yes.
As only the Masters can.
Oh, wow.
You know,
that's because Bud Light's not a sponsor. That's why.
Exactly right. $1.50 egg sandwiches, but no dilly dilly, please. Hold the dilly dilly. Anyway, it was this was my favorite game tonight in terms of just competitiveness. I thought this thing had it all. This game had everything for me. And again, I'm not a Lightning honk. I don't care who wins. To be honest, people don't believe that, but it's true. But I just wanted to see a good, fiery, competitive game, and I thought the Lightning played their best game of the series, and so that's why they won 3-1.
Well, and what I like, too, is they put on a clinic in the third period of how to shut it down.
Oh, they did. They did.
I mean, they were dominating play while New Jersey's trying to make a push, and yeah, they couldn't.
New Jersey couldn't get past the blue line. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the forechecking and all that was great.
They put on a clinic tonight in the third period of how you take a lead and you shut the other team down.
Right. It was like the four corners, baby. It was good stuff. So we'll have more about the Lightning, of course, on Thursday to get you ready for what will be game five, right?
Game five will be Saturday, yes.
Of the Eastern Conference, or of this first round in the East NHL playoffs. Meanwhile, the Rays also played. It was a businessman special in the afternoon. They got down 1-0. They rallied to win 4-2, but with some shaky moments again by Alex Calame in the ninth inning. And we'll get to that in just a second. I just wanted – Mark Tompkin wrote about this in the Tampa Bay Times. If you want to check him out on TampaBay.com. We know the injuries that the Rays are going through right now. And let's face it, this was not, you know, the 26 Yankees to begin with. But, when you lose a Kevin Kiermaier, Matt Duffy is out on the DL. I mean, this thing is really kind of being held together by some baling wire and scotch tape. But this was their lineup 2-5. Which is like, you know, supposedly the meat of the order. And consider that, you know, I know they were playing the Rangers, but, you know, this you're supposed to be going up against the AL East. And we all know what teams like Boston and the Yankees have in their lineup. But they went with Daniel Robertson batting second. Carlos Gomez was your three hitter. CJ Cron, who's, I think, on like an 8-game hitting streak right now, was after him. And then Hadani Hechavarria was your number five guy.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
That's the meat of your order. In what league that you play professionally is this considered murderer's row?
Double A?
Maybe double A. I don't even know.
Playing for the Montgomery Biscuits?
Yeah, you could argue that anybody at, you know, any lineup they throw out there in Durham it might be as good or better than this. Denard Span, of course, led off. He still is I think leading them in RBIs with 11. Wilson Ramos is their other good player. But that's it, man. I mean, that's what they got right now. And yet they win a series, which is something they haven't done. They win a home series at that.
Well, kudos to Jake Faria. Jake Faria pitched a very good game today.
He did, and he needed to. And, you know, we talked about how they needed one of their big three starters, which is really kind of what they have right now. To step up and start pitching deeper into games. I think Blake Snell sort of did that.
He had one bad start, but yeah. The rest of them, he's been pretty good. Jake Faria was good today.
Yeah, even though Snell, you know, threw 114 pitches two games ago, he still went into the sixth and gave up just one hit. Then his last outing, of course, was very, very good, and now Faria picks it up. So we'll see. Maybe Chris Archer, I think he pitches on Friday, I want to say. Maybe he can keep it going. And then, you know, we'll see, because they're not going to score runs. I mean, look, this was almost an outburst with four runs. And yet, Alex Colome is not Alex Colome. It's really funny because, you know, you think about the guys that they could have or maybe should have traded along with Longoria and some of the others. Kiermaier being out, it's just not a good lineup, to say the least. And you know, Colome was one of those guys that they could have traded, and he's not locking games down.
Well, remember, this offseason was bizarre. There were so many free agents unsigned.
There's 100 guys down at IMG.
It made trading very hard, because why give up assets to get a player when I can sign free agents that are still out there? And so,
exactly.
you know, who's to say the Rays didn't try to trade Colomay?
Oh, I think they did. I think they absolutely did. But now his value can't be very good. Now he's got a time to work out of it. But, you know, his control is gone. He's throwing a higher percentage of cutters than he ever did.
He walked the first two batters tonight. Or today.
Walks the first two. And, yeah, after he walks the first one, he throws three straight balls, gets a strikeout, then a run-scoring single, and all of a sudden it's 4-2 with men on. And finally he gets a pinch hitter Ronald Guzman to hit into a double play. And it counts, right? This is progress. This is a save. But it's as Gruden would say, it's a ride on the Shikra, man. Every time you put that guy out there, you really don't know what you're going to get. And he's supposed to be the one thing that they're sure of, you know, is their closer. So you might see, and Sergio Romo was warming up, you might see more of him down the stretch until.
If Colomay doesn't start turning around and becoming the Alex Colomay he's been the last few years, you might have to go to Romo as your closer.
Yeah, and I think they were maybe one or two pitches away from putting Romo in that game. He was in the bullpen throwing, and that might be the way they go until he gets straightened out. But he just doesn't have command. I mean, he missed. He used to miss in the dirt with fastballs or away or whatever. He was throwing balls, you know, over guys' heads. I mean, it wasn't even close with the fastball. So we'll see if he can straighten it out. But the Rays do get a win there. I mentioned kind of a big day, a $1 place today. I guess if you like the draft and you're into Liar's Poker, which I'm not, you can deal me out because I've played that game and no one wins. But Jason Light's going to be available. He's going to meet the media to talk about the draft. And I'll give you a preview. We could trade up. We could trade down. We could stay where we are at number 7. That's about what you're going to get.
There's a lot of good players on our board.
If we're going to get a good player at 7, if we stay there,
yeah,
we'll get
we
a good player.
Seven, yeah.
Yeah. Then I guess we'll hear some, and we haven't really talked about this, but DeMar Dotson undergoing, knee surgery for a meniscus tear, which is not either a good thing for a guy that's going into his 10th season or the right timing of the year, because it means he's going to miss all of OTAs, and they just hope that he's back by training camp. But that might affect sort of what they're thinking in the draft. I mean, I think now, you would say, well, does that mean you draft a tackle? Well, not necessarily. Remember, you got Caleb Benenacht, who they would be happy with at guard or tackle. I think they see him more as a guard right now. But if he just went out there and played tackle and they left him there, he'd be fine. But this all of a sudden, I think, really brings Quentin Nelson into play because, you know, Benenacht was going to play potentially the other guard spot. So if you have a chance to address the offensive line, Nelson's the best offensive lineman. He's not a tackle, but it gives you some flexibility with Benenacht. And I think that's probably the way that they'd have to be thinking right now, just depending on what happens in front of them. But look, there's a lot of speculation about what's going to happen in the draft, and we'll get all into that certainly tomorrow with Jason Light. And on into next week where, what are we? We're a week away. 1 week away from the
NFL
draft.
1 week away from the draft. And I think there's three positions that you're going to see them take some point
for
in
sure.
the draft. Is
for
be
sure.
Offensive line,
yep.
Secondary,
and
running back. Those are the three positions I think you're going to see them take players in. Now, other positions.
And maybe in that order.
It might be. And it could be multiple. You might take multiple offensive linemen.
You could double up. I'll tell you one other one that no one's talking about that I think might end up being their first pick. I mean, we just don't know. And that's it's more because of the abundance of this position in the draft, and it's defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. Look, Gerald McCoy is going into his, eighth or ninth season? I think it's his ninth season. Well, 2010 he was draft pick, so eighth season, I guess.
No, this will be ninth. If 2010.
This will be his.
Yep.
That's right. He played 10, so this will be his ninth. So he's not going to, I think after this year, the big contract that he just signed, all the guaranteed money is gone. I don't know that they're going to cut Gerald, but we've seen the production wane a bit, in terms of sacks, obviously. I think he's still a very, very good player, but at some point that quick first step won't be as quick. And who do you have? I mean, they went out and they signed a couple of defensive tackles, but those are not your three technique up the field, mm-hmm. put pressure on the quarterback type guys necessarily. So they may have to address it. And Washington's Vita Vey is that guy who you could make a good argument for being a top 10 pick. So, you know, again, depending on how everything falls. One more thing I want to say, too, and I should have addressed this earlier in the week, because Sean Payton came out and said some things about, you know, the four quarterbacks that have been mentioned going maybe even, in, you know, the top 10, maybe even in the top five or six, which is what the Bucs are hoping for. And Payton commented that, you know, well, got to be careful because, even, you know, such a premium at the quarterback position, but none of these guys, he believes, are Carson Wentz. He just doesn't see, think that there are any of them, Sam Darnold or Rosen or any of those guys, are in the same, sort of the same conversation. And my thing would be, yeah, that makes sense, especially since the Saints are in the market for a quarterback.
I was going to say, are they trying to trade up and get one of them?
They have to get one. I mean, they're picking, I think, 26th.
So I mean, okay, could they trade up and get one of those guys?
And not only just trade up, but how far up? If you can successfully trash every quarterback, this is what this draft is about. You know, it's about people either on or off the record or some kind of record saying that, you know, the guys that they want to see fall to them really suck. And for Sean Payton to do it on the record and Peter King to think, oh, wow, that's just brutal honesty. Thanks, Sean. No, that's a guy hoping that one of those four quarterbacks, you know, drops all the way to a spot where he can either move up and get him, because Drew Brees is going to play two more years. I mean, I think that's all he's got. And, you know, the Saints are obviously going for it, but they have to start finding who – and let me tell you, the quarterback class, at least is what they're saying, next year isn't even as good as this one. So if you don't like these guys, wait till next year, okay? So whether it's Lamar Jackson or whoever Sean has his eye out for, I don't know. But it just seemed damn convenient that Sean Payton would go after, you know, and sort of, you know, try to blow up these quarterbacks in the obvious hope, in my opinion, that, you know, one of these guys drops like a stone all the way to them. I just think it's funny, man, this time
of year. So do we need to start that about Saquon Barkley then?
Yes. And you've heard people do. I'm telling you, I've heard people say stuff about Saquon Barkley.
Of course.
You know, well, look at it. You know, he's had a couple big games, but, like, he's not consistent. There's some games he disappears. He all bounces everything outside, you know, and just the whole running back conversation about how, why would you take a running back in the first, you know, round, let alone the first 10 picks? Also, I think I saw a story, and I don't know how accurate it is, that Barkley's making, or people around him making rumblings that he doesn't want to go to the Browns. You know, that's another good story. We're going, oh,
who,
no.
Really, who, but really, who does want to go to the Browns?
Well, I think Sam Darnold wants to go there. You know, I think somebody wants to get paid wants to go there. I wouldn't be afraid of going to the Browns.
With the rookie salary cap now, would you rather go to the Giants at two or the Browns at one?
Well, of course.
The
money's not that much different, but I think just the whole – I mean, for you to come out and say, I mean, and look, Eli Manning did it, and it worked, right, and others.
Well, do you think that's what Jim Mora Jr. was doing for his guy, Josh Rosen, saying he's not a good fit in Cleveland?
Perhaps. But I think Mora is just bitter that he got fired because Josh Rosen wasn't a good enough player at UCLA. I mean, he says he loves a kid, and he still thinks he's the best quarterback in the draft, at the same time saying the other things about him that is surprising coming from your former college head coach. I don't know. Jim Moore is a different cat, man.
He is.
I dealt with him with the Atlanta Falcons, and, you know, Mike Smith made him look bad. Let's just put it that way. And I don't know how good of a head coach Mike Smith is, but he won a hell of a lot of games in Atlanta that Jim Moore couldn't win. So, you know, it just – I don't know. This time of year kind of grates on me. We've had so many mocks, and we've had so many, you know, analysts and mock 5.0s, and we're just a week away. So we have plenty of draft coverage.
We're getting your mock draft next Wednesday, correct? That's what we'll be doing the podcast next week. You're going to do a 7-round mock draft?
One through, what would that be, 7 times 32, so about 200.
I don't know how many compensatory picks there are, so it's hard to – I don't know how many picks there are.
Can you imagine if I sat here and did that? There'd be like three people listen to it, and we would be two of them.
Well, speaking of tomorrow, we're gonna break down all 256 games of the NFL schedule. So
that's right. Yeah, we're just waiting for it to come out at 8 o'clock, and we'll tell you exactly. And that's what I was gonna mention. The other part of this is pay close attention. You know why you should pay close attention? I asked that question earlier. I will tell you rhetorically. It is because how this schedule falls might say a lot about how their season goes. We don't know if Jameis Winston is gonna be available still. They have not, to my knowledge, at least as a few days ago, The NFL has not interviewed Jameis Winston, which means their investigation is continuing. So, depending on how the first three games line up, might, you know, can Ryan Fitzpatrick beat, you know, the Chicago Bears in Chicago? Can he beat the 49ers at home? I mean, you know, the one thing about the schedule over the last few years has been that in almost every case, every division, the NFL has deliberately loaded up division games in November and December because, one, it prevents teams essentially from, you know, tanking or not tanking, but not playing guys if they've already clinched their positions, whatnot. So it obviously makes that week 17 more competitive, but also, you know, they just tend to want to create drama, you know, in November, late November and December. So the chances are that you're going to see a lot of non-conference games, you know, in those first 3 weeks, in my opinion. That's kind of what we've seen in the past. And so, you know, you look at who they're playing, you know, you could be playing at New York against the Giants. I mean, there's a number of pretty good teams, you know, that they could be up against. And I don't know if it falls kind of weird. I mean, the Bucs should pay close attention. They can't do anything about it, obviously, but it will be more interesting to see how the schedule falls, knowing, or in this case, not knowing what is going to happen to Jameis Winston. I love this day anyway because everybody does the thing where you go through and go, okay, they won that game. I got them at 9-7, you know. And every year I get a team at 9-7. That's sort of what the under-over is 8-8, and then you go up or above. But we'll see. It's an exciting day because I get to find out what my year is going to look like. So look forward to that.
Oh, it's all about you.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, where are you going to spend Christmas? You know, are you going to go to Chicago, see the relatives? Like, what, you know, where are you going to be? These are all major decisions in my household.
Well, the good thing is Christmas is a Tuesday this year, so.
Well, that's an off day. That's even better.
Yeah.
So potentially, if you didn't fly home, let's say you're on the road and you get someone to cover Monday for you, then maybe you could stay sort of over the weekend.
Yeah. What if they'll have a Monday night game on Christmas Eve, or if they'll
We don't know about
Nashville. They probably won't. They'll probably.
I think they're just going to have one Thursday night game like everybody has to have, and I don't see them on Monday Night Football.
No, I'm just even saying. I'm just saying in general, Monday Night Football on Christmas Eve. Will there be a game? Period.
Oh, will there be a game?
Yeah. Will they give ESPN that Saturday night instead?
No. Christmas Eve. I could see a Christmas.
Because normally
Eve game,
there's no sports on Christmas. The Hawaii Bowl is the only thing on Christmas Eve every year.
Yeah.
When they play that like at noon in Hawaii, but it's like, you know, 6 or 7
maybe they'll play that game on a Saturday. What do you think?
Yeah, so I mean, they may give ESPN just Saturday night because the colleges are done at that point outside of, you know.
I mean, that's
games.
The last, I believe that would be the last week of the NFL season. So yeah, probably no Monday night game.
No, actually, I think the next week will be the December.
Is
30th,
there one more?
December 30th or whatever would be.
So right around New Year's Eve?
Yeah.
So New Year's Eve is on a Monday? Is that what you're telling
me
then?
Yes, yeah, but they don't play. The last week, they never play the Monday night because the playoffs start the week after. So.
Right. Huh.
Everybody's got to end on Sunday.
I don't know. I just hope that Thursday night game's at home. There's nothing worse than a Thursday night game on the road because you're basically both for the teams and everybody else. Again, it's about me.
It really is.
I don't want to have to travel on a Wednesday. It's just weird. All right, well, we appreciate you guys listening to us, and we'll get you ready, of course, for Game 5 at Amalie Arena on Saturday. And you said that game is at
3:20 is puck drop.
20, okay. So you'll be there, of course, as always. We really enjoy the feedback that you guys are giving us on this podcast. We want you to interact with us as much as possible. You can always continue to reach us on Twitter, at SportsDayTB, or you can reach me at NFL Stroud. And, of course, email is rstroud@tampabay.com. Love it for you to rate, review this podcast. Steve, where can they do that?
Anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, whether you're listening to it through iTunes or Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, SoundCloud. Of course, tampabay.com/sports always has the latest episode, and you can do the same there, too.
Check back tomorrow. We'll have Jason Light talking about the draft. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.